Welcome back to Manga Kaiwa, finally.
Yes. You know the deal. We were gone and now we're back. I won't say anything more because, again, I go on a rant on hiatuses every time we start an episode nowadays. But anyway, I feel like I need to frantically jump onto the topic of today's discussion, which I'm quite excited for, even if it was a little hard to pin down. I don't know about you, Ben, but like, I know I'm the one who suggested this topic and I knew sort of what I wanted to talk about, but I'm not like, I wasn't like, really sure, and it took a while to like boil it down to what I wanted to talk about. Would you mind introducing what I boiled it down to, which is the topic of today's discussion?
All right, so today we will be discussing character archetypes. So essentially, like certain categories of like the way characters like in which they're written that they fit into, like that they
Exactly.
fit into. And we'll be listing examples and like some of our favorites from each one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be the kind of the
I mean, so
structure.
like, yeah, just like any other medium, anime and manga is riddled with all these sort of tropes, like just, recycled ideas, so to speak. Sometimes it's pure copy and paste, sometimes it's innovation. But essentially, like, sort of just tropes and little kind of ticks with the characters and like how the character's arc progresses that, like, you can see again and again and again and again and again. One example, which is going to be the first one we're going to talk about, is like sort of the revenge type character, the hateful character. I mean, that's just one of many examples of like character types where you could technically like create like different boxes where you could put a lot of these characters from many different series, not just within the medium of anime manga, into like these different boxes. Like, I mean, there are the gag ones, there are the actual like character arcs that are taken seriously, which is mostly, I think, what we're going to be talking about today. I mean, I don't know. The reason I enjoy this so much is that, like, I've noticed that when I'm talking about characters in lists, like, oftentimes I'll feel like I'm repeating the same character because, yes, I love all of these characters. But if I'm going to talk about them in a condensed format, like, in Manga Kaiwa, where we have, a technically limited amount of time to talk about the stuff we want to talk about, like, I'm not going to be able to go into all the nuances that make these characters distinct from each other. So they kind of end up feeling like the same thing. So I'm like, yeah, that's true, right? There are those things called archetypes, basically those kind of overarching character types. I mean, like what I did there. And so that's what I wanted to talk about. And we have seven lined up for today. And I want to start with number one, which, as I mentioned, is the revenge or sort of like hatefully motivated archetype. Honestly, like, this one is, I think, Ben, I don't know if you agree, but pretty is heavily associated with like very mature series like Berserk, Vinland Saga, etc. Like, where you have, a plot that allows for a traumatic enough event that it drives an entire, character's arc, which is often hateful and revenge driven, etc., etc. And I mean, like, again, a lot of characters fall into this category, a lot of fan favorite characters. And I think what's the most fascinating thing off the bat for me with this archetype is that there's such a spectrum of quality in the characters. Like, there's the absolute garbage characters that, like, really just that's their one trick. They're a one trick pony. They're the revenge character. I think that happens a lot of the times in like the really popular isekai. Not that I've actually, read or experienced any of them. Not that I actually am an isekai fan. I make that clear. Sorry, it's true. I haven't read a lot of isekai, so maybe I'm stereotyping, but I know that a lot of the time it's a pretty optimal copy and paste format. Oh, he's a badass, OP revenge seeking protagonist. You have that, and on the other side of the spectrum, you have the characters that are like, for example, Guts. Where, yes, revenge is a very major facet of the character, and on the exterior, that's what defines them. But that basically, because of how well the story is written and the character is written, you can obviously kind of trickle down from that revenge at the surface, and you get all these nuances that are really awesome, like with Thorfinn, Guts, etc. And that's like my like major impression of this character, and what like sticks out to me the most is just the vast variety of them. Ben, I'm trying to think, like, what do you think other notable, like, kind of hatefully driven, not necessarily revenge types, but just like hatefully driven characters are for you? I don't know. Do you like have some that I haven't listed?
I think that I guess obviously I think Kurapika is another like good revenge driven character, because I mean that is essentially at least from the beginning his entire motivation, right? That so he become a hunter is that he wants to take revenge on the Phantom Troop, who is this gang of sort of, I mean they're not really like, because like they're not mercenaries, but they just kind of like but basically
They're
this,
celebrity
I don't
hitmen.
know, yeah, but this gang of, I guess, like like rampaging Nen users, Nen being the main source of power in the Hunter universe. But yeah, so they essentially they slaughtered his clan, the Kurta clan, which is very similar to, of course, like Sasuke's or Naruto's whole motivation. I think you can probably, I'm not sure if like
I think it
Kishi.
preceded. I'm pretty sure it preceded. I know there have been so many times people have like discussed this on discussions like these. Oh, which came first, Uchiha or Kurta? I think it was Kurta though. I'm not
I think
sure.
so too. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it is, but it is interesting because I feel like Kurapika is definitely one of the better revenge-driven
For
characters, because
sure. For sure.
yeah, because you can see that there are more layers to him, right? Like as with Guts, there are more layers that he is defined by, like beyond revenge.
And I think
Especially, I think, yeah, and I think that's especially made clear in the most recent arc of the manga. Even though I'm not completely caught up, you can see that, like he's not, he hasn't really moved on, but he's sort of like, yeah.
No, I think that's really interesting too, and hopefully, I mean, I'm almost 99% certain I would say that we're gonna get obviously some more Kurapika expansion in the chapters that Togashi is apparently finishing. I don't know if you guys heard, but Togashi has finally let up and is going pretty full throttle with assistants now, which is so awesome. I don't know if you heard about that, Ben, but essentially like he's actually having assistants help him, which is like unprecedented because he's always been very stubborn with that, understandably so, the pride as the creator, etc. But hopefully that means that we'll be able to like more consistently build on HXX and, thereby also Kurapika. Because I mean, I do agree with you. Like it's very natural and organic the way that that sounded so cliche, but it is the way that sort of like Togashi creates like this presence to Kurapika where that he hasn't forgotten about the pain that he experienced. He hasn't forgiven the spiders. But I think what I've heard a lot of people say is their kind of general takeaway from Kurapika's development in the York New arc is that, the bond and the care and the love, you could even say between the Phantom Troop members was just so humanizing to him and his image of them, as the people who slaughtered his clan. And I think, as he realizes the lengths he's gone to in order to get revenge on them, I think he sort of realizes, I guess, that there's not really much separating him from the people he's trying to kill. Again, that's speculative. It's not like it's, actually stated. But if I'm reading between the lines, that's what I would say is his kind of shtick. And I think like that's a really kind of common arc. I think a lot of the revenge type characters go through. I don't think I've read a single series completed with like a proper ending where the revenge and hate-filled character from the beginning of the story is completely just as hateful as they were at the beginning. They've always at least found some contradiction, some reason to doubt their hatred, always. Even if they haven't completely turned to the other side, I mean, that's also very rare, but even Guts, like Berserk isn't over by any means. Oh my gosh, the pain of this recent chapter.
Yeah.
But like, and who knows, maybe I'll be eating my words because I do not know what's going to happen in these upcoming few chapters. I really don't. But he has, especially through the Fantasia arc, or I mean, I think it's been most apparent in the Fantasia arc, but throughout the story, let's just say, slowly begin to realize that, his fixation on revenge is not only exhausting and unnecessary almost to a certain extent. Obviously, I'm not saying that absolutely, but it also is harmful to the things that actually matter to him most, i.e. Casca. And I think that, like, you know, that is a very common characteristic. Again, I'm not completely caught up on Vinland Saga, but I know that that's the direction that Vinland Saga goes in. Like, I know that the recent Vinland arc is basically Thorfinn trying to, and no spoilers, this is very vague, kind of consolidate his 180 degree turn from what he was in the prologue, in like a very kind of tangible form, which is I think again a representation of the message that a lot of these revenge hate-filled characters eventually kind of result in, inevitably almost. Because it's true, like, you know, it does become a little tiring at some point when you see a character, you know, just rage the whole time. I think, like, with the exclusion of Guts, where it's just like you've gone through so much to understand his rage that it's just like, damn, yeah, go on. Yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like these types of characters because I think there's like so many opportunities to humanize characters, which is one of my favorite character arcs. I mean, arguably, it's all character arcs, but by this, I mean, like, you know, becoming less of an emotionless monster and more of like a, I guess, you know, an empathetic
Yeah, or even just, just like mellowing out a bit, But I guess that does constitute becoming more empathetic. So yeah.
No. You know, it is. It's almost like this kind of, in a meta sense, this arc where you get closer to the character because the character becomes, I guess, more challenged in their ways of revenge and hatred, and then they come to see things more like the average person, i.e. the reader, you know, who, I mean, most likely, I'm not saying always, is probably not in the same hateful, revenge-driven mindset. And I feel like it's like in the meta sense, it's almost like you're getting closer to this character. As they become more empathetic, you feel like you kind of can understand them a little more, because they're less one note, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Very,
Indeed.
very, very iconic character archetype, I will say. Like, very iconic. I'd say, like, I mean, there are obviously other kind of character, I guess, sub-archetypes you could say that fall into this category besides revenge-filled. I would say, like, for example, even like the insane sort of insane insane sort of like archetype, like, you know, what you get with, I guess, late stage Death Note Light Yagami, or like I think most notably Shigaraki, for example, from My Hero Academia. Like, you know, these characters, it's not like they have a specific goal that is the object of the revenge, so to speak. It's more like they've just been driven to, like, to the point where they just don't see the point in sanity anymore, and like their hatred is just sort of like omnidirectionally directed, is if you get what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't matter, they're just gonna destroy. I think Shigaraki is probably the poster child for that, in my opinion, but obviously there are a lot of other types of characters. And then you can, you know, you could go on. Like, there are the characters that are just like bitter, and like, you know, like Eren, for example, from Attack on Titan is, I think, another very good example. I mean, it's not revenge that he's seeking necessarily, but there certainly is a level of contempt that, you know, is kind of laced into his actions that have, like, sort of like a technically not really revenge related goal, more of like a self-protection goal sort of element to them. Yeah.
Indeed. All right. Okay, I guess
You
so I
got
guess
it.
we'll definitely won't finish by the time, but anyway, but I guess so moving on to the next sort of archetype, I will be talking about this like the flawed archetype, right? The in the sense
Exactly.
that the sort of like the self-deception, denial, like that kind of character.
For sure, for sure. And again, I want to clarify, like, before we even get into the meat of this archetype, like, obviously there's going to be overlap in between these archetypes. I'd say that yes, there are certain character traits that are just so, you know, like, prominent in the character that that's essentially like where I think you'd kind of instinctively put them in. You know, the box you put them in is definitely that, because that's just the first thing that comes to mind about them. Like, for guts, for example. But again, guts could easily fall into this next category, the flawed archetype, which I think is pretty self-explanatory on the surface. Ben, do you kind of want to go through like your thoughts on this archetype, like just defining it a little, if you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think that this is actually an interesting archetype, because I know like when you texted me like this like list, this isn't actually one like I would have thought of, I think, initially, but I think that, you know, when I do think on a bit more, it does make sense, because these are characters, because, you know, essentially, like, being flawed, you can sort of extend to, like, a lot of characters, in fact, probably most characters,
sure.
Right? But this is a certain type of, like, a certain, like, type of, you know, not type, but a certain aspect where, you know, there are these aspects of denial and self-perception and sort of being, like, I guess, like, unsure, right?
I think like a really common kind of element to these characters, not all the time, I'm not saying like this is like, you know, an exhaustive, like every single character in this quote-unquote category you know falls under this condition, but I think a very common kind of effect of this is like the audiences actively cringe or like hate the actions of this character sometimes, because, you know, from an exterior perspective, it's pretty clear that this character is doing something that is just kind of putting off the inevitable. I don't know if you want to go through like an example first, Ben, because like I think an example is going to be really important to sort of like clarifying what we mean by this archetype.
So I think that one example is would be Gon Freecss from Hunter x Hunter. Especially, I guess definitely specifically, although he does show like the signs earlier on, but this really becomes apparent like in the Chimera Ant arc, where he's just so, and again, right, I mean, you know, we talked about the overlap. So this is an arc where actually Gon himself is pretty consumed by, you know, like hatred and revenge. And you know, he does kind of like sort of go on this, I guess, I don't know, I'm trying to like put it into words, but
sort of like a rampage, but not in the traditional sense, I guess.
Yeah, he reaches this point where, like, you know, he sort of like, you know, does things that are clearly to the detriment of himself and, you know, those around him,
long-term value.
Especially with, you know, Killua just
and
like Komugi, actively.
And Komugi as well.
Just actively, like, you know, pushing away and like even endangering like those near him just to like, you know, get like what he wants, or at least what he thinks he
in
wants.
The moment, right? Because I think another pretty defining characteristic of these flawed quote unquote characters is that they're very short-sighted. It's like, you know, doing what is gratifying in the moment as opposed to what, you know, is the truth, is the actual honest reality of your situation and what you're struggling with. And I think for Gon, that definitely is the case, I would say. I think another character that I really want to talk about that I think is like, I would also say the poster child of this category is Hikari Shinji from Evangelion. Like, I mean, it's no secret that Shinji is viewed as a bum by a lot of people, even that love Evangelion, right? Because he is, especially in the original series. Again, I just finished the reboot movies, which I absolutely adored. And I think it definitely drew my attention to, you know, Shinji being really like the iconic flawed character, with actually the contrast to the original portrayal of him in the 1990 series that the movies provided. Like, yeah, you cringe. You're face-palming the whole time when you're watching Shinji do what he does. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he does like this stuff where, like, yeah, you're not in his situation, so you can see why it's absolutely ridiculous and just almost like petty, but it is, right? Like, that's what probably most people would do in a situation. If not, they would do even worse than he did. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like sort of like Shinji is, and his dichotomy with the two other main pilots, Rei and Asuka, as well as his relationship to, you know, the act of piloting an Eva, is, I mean, fundamentally, it's avoidance, it's escapism. Again, I'm not saying that's like the end all be all interpretation of that narrative beat, But it definitely is, I think, one that a lot of people come to because there's a lot of stuff I would say that points to it. Like, Shinji isn't piloting the Eva because he wants to save humanity. No, he isn't. He's piloting the Eva because of the personal gratification that he gets from it because people may praise him or people may be proud of him, especially his father. It's not a selfless thing. And it's the fact that, like, I think, he ends up like wallowing in this self-hatred that borders on self-pity. It's like, it's almost like he recognizes the weird kind of contradiction, the like kind of pretty immoral contradiction in his actions. But at the same time, like, even that acknowledgement is hypocritical. Like, he's not, like, his self-hatred is not really self-hatred in the purest sense. It's like self-pity, sort of, if you get what I'm saying. And it's like, I think that is like the most kind of flawed, kind of in the traditional sense as it gets. I think Shinji definitely represents this category for me. I'm trying to think. There are some other characters. Which other ones do you want to talk about?
It's funny because actually, I think another one. Sorry, it's sort of. Sorry.
No, bro. He
Yeah,
got to
let me
drink
try.
that duck juice quickly.
Yeah, but anyway, but it's funny because I think that another character that actually comes to mind from this topic actually isn't from an anime manga, but it's still from a Japanese
Oh.
media. It's Raiden from the Metal Gear series.
Oh, well,
And
why not? Why not? Go ahead, go ahead.
I feel like from the very beginning, Raiden shows these some shows he is kind of this flawed protagonist because like it's even like it's almost like meta in a way because like when Metal Gear Solid 2, like the first game in which he appears, came out, people were kind of like people felt that that Hideo Kojima, the creator of the series, pulled a sort of like bait and switch in the sense that everybody thought that we'd play as Solid Snake again, but which was the case, yes, but that was only for like I guess the prologue portion of the game, and then for the rest of the game you'd play as Raiden. And so I feel like even from the beginning there's this sort of like this meta aspect to it, but also like within the actual game and narrative itself, Raiden does sort of like he doubts himself, right? He's in this like sort of mission that he's undertaken, but like he's only, but he even states himself, I think, at one point that he's only there because he's under orders. I mean, he doesn't actually want to be there, and he sort of like, he feels like he can't really measure up to like the actual Solid Snake, and these sort of like these feelings of doubt and self-denial are even extended to Rising Revengeance, which is sort of like the last game in which he's featured. And he feels that that is I guess sort of like this rampage he's undertaken, supposedly in the name of justice or in the name of good, is a bit more nuanced because these are actual people that he's cyborgs but still people nonetheless, and he sort of like he copes with it, right? But he finally sorts of, but he does sort of like resolve this in the sense that he learns to accept his Jack the Ripper persona, in order to use it for, not good necessarily. Well, I guess,
But not good in the purest sense, but like
in
sort
the
of like that
purest
morally
sense.
gray sort of. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And then I think the thing that amazes me most about like the writing example is, for example, that was what did I just say? In any case, the thing that kind of amazes me the most about the writing example is that, there are, it really is a clear indication, I think, especially when I compare it to like the pool of characters I think of when, I say the word flawed character archetype, for example, is, I guess, like that there really are two clear paths I think that these characters can go down. One of which is, I think, like the path of correction, and the other one is of acceptance, I would say. Like, again, that sounds very pretentious, but I think that's like the gist of it, right? Like, either the character's like, okay, I need to stop lying to myself, or the character's like, okay, this is wrong. I need to change this, and I need to actually accept the fact that I'm lying to myself. And do what my gut is telling me. Because oftentimes in this case, you know, there are two sides to this character's inner monologue, and they're definitely conflicting. And I think, like, you know, either way, the resolution to these characters' archetypes, this character archetypes, I guess, character progression arc, I would say, or development arc, is most often like some way that their self-denial, their self-deception goes away. Like, if they have a happy ending, even in the most remote sense, it's somehow that the truth, it becomes clear, if you get what I'm saying. Like, it's like, you know, okay, they have come to accept, to acknowledge their self-deception. I think that's probably like the kind of the definite good ending, good ending,
Good ending.
for a lot of these blood archetypes. No matter what kind of form that takes, I think oftentimes it does take a pretty tragic form, but not all the time. And I think that, I guess spoilers a little bit, but Shinji's, you know, conclusion in the movie is, I think, an example of one that's not so tragic, which I really appreciated, by the way. Nice. All right. Well, Ben, if do you have anything else to say about the flawed archetypes before we move on to the next category?
I mean, I guess I'm not so much on the archetype as a whole, but yeah, but I think, but yeah, exactly. So Raiden definitely does. So Raiden in particular does take the path of acceptance.
And I'm sure we'll address him again, maybe in one of the archetypes down the line. I'm not going to say which one it is, but I'm pretty sure you have an idea. In any case, I think the next category that I really want to go over, I think I listed this one in our chat, right, Ben? Which one was it again that we're going to go over?
Let me check.
Yeah, it was the morally pure protagonist. Okay, so this is the protagonist that immediately, what word do you think people use to describe these people, Ben?
Pure.
Boring as well, right?
Oh,
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, pure is, of course, yeah, but like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, if I think of like, bro, Jonathan Joestar is the most boring JoJo, like, you know, typical stuff like that. I'm not saying that the people who are wrong, I don't know why I actually did that voice. I don't know. All I know is that it's really hard to pull off a compelling pure-hearted protagonist. It really is hard to pull off. I think it's possible, especially because I think that the reason, like, that these morally pure protagonists, you know, have any chance at success in the first place is because of how naive they are. And I think that does play into sort of like an intersection with the flawed character archetype we just finished talking about. But it's like, I feel like they're kind of ridiculous, like, morality. Like, in the case of, for example, Tanjiro from Demon Slayer or Deku from My Hero Academia, you know, I'd say they have varying degrees of success, these pure-hearted protagonists. And again, as I said at the beginning of the segment, like, it's hard to pull off. So I think very few actually end up becoming quote unquote compelling. I think the most compelling aspect of them is that it's so easy for other characters to challenge their values, to challenge their beliefs, their resolve, because of how ridiculous and naive oftentimes their beliefs are, right? Like, if I think of, for example, you know, Izuku Midoriya from My Hero, countless times the villains have kind of challenged him and, you know, his righteousness. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because obviously I think it's often said, in fact, in the series itself by various characters, that the age where you could definitively label people as good and evil is gone. It's gone. And right now there is this grayness that nobody's used to in the story. And that obviously, as a result, someone like Izuku, who comes in with the ideology of All Might, a hero from the past, is going to be challenged because the villains of the present are not the same. They are complicated. They aren't one note. And I think, you know, likewise with the demons and, you know, the sad backstory, as much as it gets clowned on, I think it's a pretty classic example of, like, you know, the good direction you can go in. I mean, I'm not going to comment on my thoughts on Tanjiro as a protagonist right now because I think that's a little heated. But I think he does some things well, and definitely one of those things is, you know, some of the interactions he has with the demons, which are not bad. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to talk extensively about this. I don't know what you think, Ben, because
Yeah, exactly. So there's not much that can be, there's not a whole lot that can be really said, you know. I mean, these characters are, you know, morally pure. They're just, you know,
Jonathan
chosen by
Jesse
people.
stars, you know what I'm saying? Like.
Jonathan Jester, yeah, but yeah, but you know, they can come like, I mean, I mean, personally, I do find Jonathan himself to be pretty compelling, you know. I mean,
I
as much
think.
as, you know, people like to drag him down, it's you know, he's
He's
a hero
a
boy,
likable
and
guy. I
sometimes.
mean, that's a feat in and of itself to create a likable character, I feel like. I don't know, but like, don't you think, like, for example, I think I'm kind of hesitant to say this because it's not really lending it any kind of narrative quality, but I think the common trait is like in a weirdly similar way to like the revenge-driven protagonists who have like this burning hatred that like just turns them into oftentimes, especially in action series, like these relentless, like powerful beasts. Like the morally kind of pure protagonists are like so kind of fixated on justice, what have you, right? Like they have almost the same level of like resolve. They will not give up, like, you know, and it results in some pretty badass moments, I will say. I don't know. That's kind of perspective on the matter.
Indeed, yeah. Jonathan is again, Jonathan is a very good example of that. Just like pure like burning resolve. Pull that up. Yeah.
Burning harmony.
Oh
Sorry. It's just that's immediately what
no.
I thought of.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm trying to remember like like off
No,
track.
we can go off track. We can go on a little tangent, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to remember like the exact line. It was like
Sunday to yellow,
oh my god. No, but I mean like before that, like the like the build up to it,
Oh, yeah, the one where he's
like
like,
burning heat, like
yeah, some burning sunlight crap. I don't know. Isn't that that's the use he that's the move he used to defeat Bluford? No, it wasn't Bluford, was it? It was the other
I
one.
think
The guy
one
who
of them.
gave him pluck. Brujo moment, Jobra moment. All right. Well, I think we can move on to the next category, which honestly, no pun intended, is a bit of a gray category. So the next category is, the next category that we have to go over is the morally gray kind of, I guess, anti-hero category, which for a lot of people is an incredibly likable category, because I think it just is so open. As I said, it's quite gray, ha ha ha. Like I think there's just so much variety in this category for like what the motivations of the character is, whereas I think a lot of the other categories do limit the scope of what can happen with the plot and the character. I think that with morally gray, because it's just so ambiguous, right? Like, you know, it's I think a lot of these characters are quite reactionary. And immediately when I say that, I think of actually a character that you might not honestly like put in this category immediately. And again, maybe I wouldn't if I were kind of examining another facet of this character. But I think a lot of the times you could take Ichigo Kurosaki as a morally gray protagonist. Like obviously he has his morals, but they're not for the sake of morals. They're not like altruistic, like, you know, morality for the sake of morality with no basis, like pure morality, like the previous category. It's more like he has the things he wants to protect, as he reiterates time and time again throughout the series. And everything that he does basically depends on what the state of those things he wants to protect are. If they're under threat, he will take action. But, and I think a lot of the reason why people take issue with Ichigo, again, this is a topic for, this is a completely, you know, a separate topic on its own, I think you'd agree. But like, the thing with Ichigo is that I think he often gets called reactionary and thereby, you know, quote unquote, lacking compared to other shonen protagonists and protagonists in general, because he doesn't take initiative in the traditional sense, I guess. Again, maybe I'm getting it wrong, but I think that's what I think the biggest complaint I hear about Ichigo is. But I think it's sort of, it makes sense, right? Because it's realistic in a way, which I think is another character trait that a lot of these archetype, like these anti-heroes possess, right? Ichigo, if his valued things, if his treasured people and things and his happiness and the people he cares about are safe, he has nothing to do. He's not working towards some kind of goal. He's satisfied. It's only when the villains take action and put those things in jeopardy that he needs to take action. He needs to become that traditional shonen powered up protagonist, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's honestly not anything bad. I mean, again, it may kind of reflect poorly on the badassery and the, resolve of the protagonist, but that's not really realistic, right? That's not always what
Though,
you need.
yeah, though let's be clear. I mean, Ichigo can be very badass at times,
He can.
but I think, but yeah, I
But
mean, I guess, like you were saying, but that just makes him, more relatable, right? Because think about, because Ichigo is, he's this kid in high school. I mean, how many people do you know at that age who have this like grand, I guess like overarching goal, right?
yeah,
Chances
but
are it's
then
just.
how many people that age do you know are like these superpowered ghosts that can destroy planets, huh?
Good point. Good point.
No, I'm just playing devil's advocate, because yeah, I mean, both ways, right? Both ways. Yeah. Don't know, like I'm just giddy with hype for the new Bleach anime. Anyway, again, I'm going off topic, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but oh my God, the third trailer that dropped as the recording of this video, my God, was it great.
Yes, indeed, indeed.
Yeah. All right. And then I think that, like, as for the different kind of, I guess, resolutions to this character, or the arcs, the different pathways that I think a lot of these characters go down, as I said before, there's just such a variety that there's not really any point in naming and explaining or detailing one specific one or multiple, like we did with a lot of the previous categories, right? With the revenge filled and the flawed. I think really it oftentimes comes down to dealing with, because I think the way that I would describe it is this: morally gray protagonists, they're not without values. It's just their values are not based on morality. Their values are based on something completely different, often tangible things or what have you. And I think, again, as I said, with Ichigo, the plot is dictated, especially, I mean, obviously in their case, by what happens to those things. And I think a very common kind of situation is that there will be some major losses. Like, I think a good story featuring a protagonist like this shows, the death of a character that is very close to, or is very valued by this anti-hero archetype character, right? Like, and kind of exploring the reaction of the character to that. Again, I think a lot of this is pretty emotionally kind of like reactionary. Again, I'm not saying that an active character, so to speak, cannot be morally gray. But I think that, in that case, they have to have certain goals that kind of distract them from what they're going towards. Okay, that made absolutely no sense. But take Luffy from One Piece, for example. Luffy from One Piece, yes, his goal is ultimately, Kaizoku. He wants to become Pirate King. That's the goal, right? The thing is, though, is that it's not like he'll do anything and everything to achieve that goal. He won't. He's not Machiavellian, so to speak. He's someone who has moral limits. It's not like he's going to go out of his way to be this saint, this Samaritan, right? But he is going to go out of his way to take the path that involves not harming other people, because that's just his, that's this, it's not him. He's being true to himself. Think that's, a lot of the times what you can boil Luffy's character down to. He is true, he is honest, he is transparent, he is authentic in every single situation he's in, almost. And I think that morally gray protagonists that have an active goal, I think it's a little difficult, right, to make them not these reactionary characters instinctively, right? Because, like, it's like, yes, they can have these morally gray elements to them, but it definitely isn't their defining characteristic. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think that's another thing that makes Ichigo kind of special, is that his defining characteristic is his reactional way of thinking and doing, right? Like, I think that is what I would say. Whereas I think a lot of other morally gray characters, the kind of anti-hero nature is sort of like just a side note a little bit. Because again, complete moral grayness doesn't really involve, I think oftentimes, obviously not in the real world, but oftentimes in stories, doesn't really kind of lend itself well to, like, I want to, do this and that, and I'm gonna, achieve this bombastic goal, blah blah blah, Hokage, I don't know, Wizard King, blah blah. Again, it's a tricky topic to talk about because it's just so vast and ambiguous. And I mean, definitely very interesting. Obviously, just like with the revenge protagonist, which I think, or the hate-filled protagonist, it's also quite vast. But that means that there's going to be a spectrum of quality as well, obviously, as is to a certain extent the case with a lot of these categories. But I think especially with this one because it's just so big. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think that and I guess like to sort of expand on what you were saying, right? With like the whole like how like not declaring like an overarching goal sort of like extends itself well to this category is I think because like when you declare this goal, at least in a lot of these stories, like you're aligning yourself in a way, right? You're aligning
Exactly. Yeah,
yourself in
exactly.
one way or another,
Yeah.
which doesn't always like really lend itself to this whole idea of being morally gray, right?
Yeah,
But I
yeah,
think
yeah.
that like seeing like these characters like Ichigo, like seeing how they interact, like how they react to the world around them, I think can actually make them like extremely compelling all the time,
Yeah,
just like
yeah.
that in and of itself,
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like you can almost I mean, you can definitely put Gon in this category as well, right? Like, he has his priorities, and obviously he becomes quite fixated on Kite in the Chimera Ant Arc, and therefore does some very morally questionable things and says some very morally questionable things, most of all with Komugi, especially in Killua, as we mentioned before. But again, this is one of those overlap situations where, like, Gon is not, he's not focused on morality at all. Morality is just the furthest thing from his mind, so to speak, right? But it's not like, he doesn't have a goal either. It's just, I think that, it's very hard to have morally gray characters that have a goal because goals often result in a certain resolve, a certain tenacity to achieve them. And either that's going to, I think oftentimes that pushes a character to one moral extreme or the other, like do everything and everything in order to get this goal, realized, whether it mean killing or hurting or, saving and healing and blah blah blah, So I think that, again, I think it's really hard to pin down. And I think instinctively I probably want to pin this down more than I reasonably can. But it's such an interesting discussion, and that's kind of why I put it here, even if it might almost seem too big to even consider as an archetype. But yeah, all right. Well then, I think it's about time we move on to the next category. What do you say, Ben? What do you say we move on?
I say we do.
Nice, nice, nice. So what do
All
we got on the docket?
right. All right. So I guess next we have the mastermind.
Mastermind, I think. Yeah,
Yes.
nice, nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think for this one, there's definitely one character that just sort of like immediately comes to mind for both of us, and that would be Aizen for me.
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
I
Gordon
planned
Gecko.
your life since birth.
Yes. Oh, you think you've won, but that's just part of my plan.
I, for some reason, when I said that, I just envisioned the meme of like Goku saying, "Now draw her giving birth." no. And I mean, like, this is like, I feel like just as a side tangent before we actually begin diving into this, I feel like this like is one of those character archetypes that borders on ridiculousness sometimes.
Yeah,
It was all a correct plan.
it's like everything just these characters are just like, well, I guess Aizen is just able to see like foresee just like everything and just make everything go like according to plan. It does like lend itself well to like this
Big
whole
brain,
ability, right?
galaxy brain, universe
Galaxy brain. Yes.
brain,
Multiverse brain.
multiverse brain.
Omniverse brain.
Oh. No, as ridiculous as it kind of can seem sometimes, it's definitely entertaining. I won't deny that. Like,
It is certainly entertaining, yes.
yeah, I'm not denying that Aizen isn't an amazing character. I mean, I think a lot of what comes, I think what kind of makes me like Aizen isn't necessarily his kind of like character nuances. necessarily, although there are those too, but more like just the sheer kind of just coldness and just like craziness of just how calculating he can be and how few characters could even thwart just like the sheer kind of like hold he has on fate almost, if you get what I'm saying. And it's like, I think that that does apply, honestly, to a lot of these kind of characters. I think what's interesting to me is that a lot of the times I think these kind of mastermind archetypes aren't the protagonist. Not all the time. I think there's some exceptions. Like, I think firstly, an exception to come to mind would be like Light, for example. The thing is, Light is being challenged heavily by an equally powerful mastermind. Equally, I'm sorry, maybe not, but I mean, technically, yes. I'm sure there are some people who are like, well, he lost at the end. But I mean, I think it's like, it's interesting to note that I think a lot of times Mastermind, it has like this sort of like sinister villain like connotation to it, which, yeah, I mean, oftentimes these are like, talking about morally gray characters not always being Machiavellian. I think it's very likely that, a mastermind character is going to do like, one of those, I'm going to do everything in my power in order to achieve my goal, because if they're going through the trouble of, like, for example, Aizen planning this thing for like hundreds of years in advance, right? They're probably going to kill a few people to get there, and do some questionable things as well along the way. I think, like, I'm trying to think of like another character like that would really exemplify this. I mean, Madara, I guess. Madara would probably fall into this category, although I think other facets of his character definitely overshadow this, like especially compared to Aizen, where like that's his shtick.
Yeah,
But
and then
like,
like yeah,
no, go
because
ahead.
yeah, no, cause I was just gonna say because like even like within Naruto, I feel like because like Aizen, I mean, oh no, Madara would be like sort of the poster child like for this sort of Machiavellian mastermind,
But
like
then you
he
get
couldn't
Zetsu.
stop Aizen, and so, but then he, yeah, exactly, Black Sasuke,
Exactly.
even above that, but it's like oh, the entire time like he was the one.
He was the one. I am. This isn't even my final form, says the villain.
Yeah, that's and that's just like the thing with Naruto. It's like this, like yeah, it's like the puppet controlling, the puppet controlling, the puppet controlling, the puppet,
Exactly,
and it
exactly,
just keeps
exactly.
going on, you know?
Yeah, like there's
Yeah.
always a bigger fish. Yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
And now, even in Boruto, there are even bigger Otsutsuki. There are
Yeah.
even bigger big moon people. And I mean, I think that again, I wouldn't call these characters one note, but I definitely think that a lot of the times the appeal of the character, the contribution that they have to the story itself is definitely just their presence and just like the badassery to a certain extent, like just kind of just baffling people with just like the kind of ingenuity and like, damn, he saw that coming, sort of. I think the reason I even consider this is because, yeah, that's how much of a presence these characters have when they get into the plot, right? Like enough to make enough of an impression on you that you want to list them in like, like the biggest character archetype categories that you can think of. And I think that, yeah, for sure. I mean, another one that comes to mind is like Periston. And I think he's an interesting example because it's like, I mean, it's not like we actually know like what kind of plots Periston has kind of like hatched. Like not with Aizen, where we kind of have been given an explanation as to how his plan unraveled, right? Like, with White and Isshin and the birth of Ichigo and all of his different kind of heritage, his like omni-racial heritage and stuff like that. But I think like for example with Periston, and I think it also is a consequence of just Togashi being, that good of a character writer, like you don't even need to know what kind of plots he has. You don't even have to have a hint. Just his conniving little face is enough to tell you that he's like he has something cooking up in that head of his, right? Like, and I think that's almost like, if I had to guess, probably like the most common form of this mastermind archetype. Because obviously I think, stories are limited in time and length, et cetera. So they're not always going to be able to like go into great detail like Bleach does and like, oh yes, I made your mother fuse with this monster so that you could be a monster too, sort of Bleach type crap.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I mean, I think that this is definitely one of those archetypes that is very presence emphasized, like, right? Like what these characters are going to bring is a pressure, a presence. You know, they're going to challenge the main character. I think a lot of the times they come into this moral kind of, or let's say this ethical question of like, you know, fate and free will, etc. Because I think a lot of these times these characters are like sort of themselves manifestations of powers, forces that, you know, other characters just are victim to. They're just swept up by and eventually have to break out of, etc., etc. So I think there's definitely a lot of areas for nuance, but the characteristic of being a mastermind itself is, I think, pretty one note, and not in the bad way, I would say. I don't know if you agree, but that's sort of like Aizen's interesting factors, you know, besides his mastermind nature, aren't related to the mastermind nature of his at all. Like his whole weird kind of like strength complex of, oh, he actually wanted to lose to Ichigo at the end, you know, that kind of ambiguous kind of rhetorical question that was left at the end of the arc of the Arrancar saga, right? Like you're sort of like, yeah, but that doesn't really have to do with his weird plan thing. Like that doesn't have to do with the fact that he's a mastermind. It's something different. I guess the kind of what I'm trying to get at here is that, yes, masterminds, that's sort of like the most prominent facet of a character. If like a mastermind is a mastermind, that's probably what you're going to associate them with. Like, if you know, mustache twirlers. But I think if there's going to be other kind of, I guess, ambiguities to the character, it's definitely going to be, I think, away from that mastermind kind of aspect of their character. That's sort of the way I see it, at least.
Yeah.
I know there are probably so many mastermind characters I'm missing out on where I'm just like, damn, why didn't I talk about that? But I mean, yeah. I just want to get onto the next category because it's just, this is what I think of when I think of the word archetype, which is the hot-blooded kind of like determined and oftentimes very dumb protagonist.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, how many characters can I list off the top of my head that fall into this category? Again, you know, you can make some counter arguments to whether they're quote unquote dumb or not, but I think definitely like someone like Naruto, practically 80% of all shonen protagonists as well, like Goku, to a certain extent, although I think he has a kind of weird intersection with morally pure as well. Like, you know, I don't know, Natsu from Fairy, I don't know, there are so many. I think it's like the booster of shonen.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly how far back it extends, but I feel like, you know, Goku was really one of the first, but really one of the foundational protagonists within this archetype, right?
Yeah.
And in general, Dragon Ball is sort of like hailed as like, you know, the godfather of modern shonen, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of these like, you know, common tropes that we see today, like, you know, like into use for the first time. And so like, but yeah, because like Goku is like, you know, this, you know, hot-blooded, you know, dumb, like determined protagonist. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, he's like
food obsessed.
He's like, what?
Food obsessed as well. Like
food obsessed, yeah, the food too, indeed. Yeah. And you know, he just kinda stays that way, right? He's like, you know, I guess he is, you know, sort of an example of like a static character, but he still grows.
Yeah, I think the thing with these characters is that it is very easy to label them as one note kind of one trick ponies, but the thing is that I think oftentimes their development has to be done very subtly, because I mean, if you choose to make a character like this kind of really kind of loud, proud, determined kind of shonen-esque protagonist, right, no matter what kind of genre they're in, right, like, you know, you kind of have to stick with that. You kind of have to stick with that decision. And you're not going to have, like, this character break down. Like, obviously there are exceptions, but you're not going to have this character, like, have, like, this weird introspective moment. No, that would just break their character. You have to do it pretty suddenly. And I think it's hard, actually, to make, like, a nuanced. And I think this category of character is not meant to be nuanced. Again, I feel like I have this tendency to, like, kind of assume, because this is, I guess, what I like out of a character, that, you know, there has to be some kind of way that you can draw nuances out of this. And yes, I love that. But, you know, there is also the dumb fun. And I think this character archetype definitely represents that. Although, I think that what's really interesting about this is because of how just omnipotent, omnipresent this kind of character archetype is, like how many times it's been done. Like, it's just like the same thing with every aspect of life that is just so mundane that it becomes satirized. Like, there is so much opportunity with this character archetype to do some like expectation subversions, right? Like you talk about these days in the anime and manga sphere of like character subversions, especially in shonen, like with Denji from Chainsaw Man, right? Like, Denji is dumb. He is quite hot-blooded sometimes. You know, but like, he's definitely not your stereotypical shonen protagonist. No, for sure he isn't. And like, you know, it's like, I think it's like the same thing as like with the superhero genre, for example, or slowly but surely with isekai, right? Like, people are not going to keep eating up the same stuff, no matter how, you know, hungry they are for stories. You're going to have to change some stuff. And I think some people do that really well, like Tatsuki Fujimoto, who I just named with Chainsaw Man. But then I also feel like, you know, Gon, for example, like, he's not dumb. He's not, you
I
know,
mean, at least, well, yeah, I mean, in the traditional sense,
he's not,
he's not book smart, right? But like, yeah.
He's street smart, more like it, if you get what I'm saying, like, or just life smart, logic smart. But he's definitely not your traditional shonen protagonist either, especially as he gets developed throughout the story, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Because like, I mean, I guess, I guess it's pretty typical, but a lot of people like to say, like, Gon. And like, to extend Hunter x Hunter in general is like sort of this like subversion of shonen, which I think is
Very much so.
yeah
Like,
yeah
I mean, I feel like it's weird, but I almost think like Meat Canyon when I think of Gon, like a little bit. It sounds ridiculous, but it's just like, you know, taking something to such an extreme that it like just becomes something almost ridiculous. Like, you know, this hyper determined, extremely kind of like, you know, a hot-blooded mentality of a shonen character driving Gon to the point where he's a monster practically at that point. He's a monster. I mean, yeah, I think that's definitely, and I think Luffy, again, I want to bring him up because I think that Luffy is so easy to just throw into the trash of just like, nope, he's just like, you know, he's just this aloof buffoon. But that's the thing, right? Like, it's almost like another version of what I just mentioned. Like, you can take it to such an extreme that it becomes interesting. Like with Luffy, he just doesn't care so much. Like, he cares so much more about the things that he cares about than the things that he doesn't care about. That sounded really weird, but One Piece fans, you'll get what I'm saying. That it's just like it becomes interesting, it becomes unique. Like, you know, he doesn't need to understand all this complex political crap in the world. The facts are the facts. His goals are his goals, and he's going to achieve them. And that kind of straightforwardness is really, really intriguing, I think. Again, I think a lot of other characters do have some moments like that, but for Luffy, what I find really impressive is that it's like constant. He doesn't break that facet of himself. And I think like a really kind of interesting note on that would be like Oda's comment about how he doesn't actually voice almost any of, I don't think actually any at all, practically, of Luffy's inner dialogue. Like, Luffy does not have any inner dialogue throughout the entire series, I'm pretty sure. Maybe a few, but I'm pretty sure there's zero. But that's part of it. That's intentional because he says everything that he thinks. He doesn't hide anything. And that I think is really interesting because I think it does, like, it's almost like, yeah, you want hot-blooded, you want stupid? Well, I'll bring that to another extreme. Here you go. And it's like, damn, that was so cold it was hot. You know, sort of, it was so hot it was cold, sort of. All right, well, let's move on. If you don't mind, I don't know if you, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. Did you want to say anything additional about the category or?
Yeah, I guess like like the thing you were describing with like with what Luffy is going on, I think that's provided like an interesting contrast between Gon and Hunter Hunter. Like it's like sort of like this idea of like the ex this archetype being taken to an extreme, like you said, versus a deconstruction of that archetype.
Exactly. Okay, yeah, I think that's a really good way of like kind of labeling that. For sure. No, that's interesting. Yeah, because like they definitely do have that kind of Gon with the deconstruction and Luffy with the taking to the extreme, etc. Although, I mean, they are similar in certain senses, those kind of pathways. All right, well, let's move on to our second to last category, which is, if I'm not mistaken, oh shoot, I kind of messed up the order, but whatever. I think maybe is this.
Well, I think we're on the mentor now, right?
Yeah, wait, we're on the last one. We're on the last one. All right,
Yeah.
we're on the last one. Yeah, well, as we just said, it's the mentor category. So, yeah, I mean, this is another pretty easy addition to the list of very, very important, categories of characters. I think, if you think of the hero's journey, which is the template that so many stories use, I would say the overwhelming majority of stories use these, a cornerstone of that story format, that ancient story format, is the mentor figure, the guide, the kind of the light, the clarity for the character, and they oftentimes the catalyst for their growth. I mean, you can go on listing so many of these, like, Jiraiya. Again, there are some kind of less typical ones like Skull Knight or Urahara or Ascalad, which is really out there, but I have arguments. I have arguments. But yeah, and again, I think in Shonen, for example, like, I mean, Bisuke, even, and I think, again, this is one of the
Yeah.
tried and true categories and archetypes that, like, get so old, there's a lot of room for subversion, just like the last one.
Yeah. I mean, you actually, I mean, sometimes you even have with the rare occurrences where the actual like protagonist himself acts as sort of like a mentor
True,
figure.
yeah.
I would say that's most present with Gintoki and
Oh
Gintama, where
yeah,
yeah, it's
I
just
see. But I actually
yeah.
think that's very common. Like, I think it's a pretty ingenious aspect of Gintoki's character, as from what I've heard. I don't think it's very common that, like, you manage to have a protagonist that is sort of like a mentor. At least not in my experience. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because I feel like to a certain extent, Guts is as well a mentor.
I could see that. I could see that. I could see that. And I think, like, a lot of the times the mentored taking on a mentee, right, is sort of like, I guess a pretty clear way, a pretty, unambiguous way to kind of mark character development, with certain protagonist characters, etc. Like, if you've kind of experienced a character, protagonist or otherwise, kind of go through training or go through kind of like interactions with a mentor, and then they themselves kind of take up that role and bring that kind of that cycle full circle, right? I think, like, that oftentimes is a very effective way of sort of like just marking this character has grown, this character has deepened to a certain extent.
Yeah, but I guess, to give my closing thoughts on the mentor archetype, what can you say, right? It's a crucial part of the hero's journey. And even in, stories where I guess that don't necessarily follow that sort of structure, a mentor, is still important, I mean, they are plot devices, but they do but they're important, right? I mean, they're for a reason. They're there to help, the either the protagonist or other characters grow. And, they are important, staples of stories,
Of storytelling, yeah, in general, just flat out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way of putting it. I really do. Because, I mean, I feel like, you can call them plot devices all you want, but they are. And I think at the end of the day, enjoying the mentor archetype is just sort of partially and a large in large part, accepting that, I would say, like, accepting that, we love the effect that these people have on the main characters, and it's nice, it's heartwarming, it's part of the catharsis. And I think a lot of people, when a mentor character is introduced, death flags are already up for that character, like, immediately, you know what I'm saying? Because that's just such a staple of the hero's journey. I mean, obviously it doesn't always have to happen, but it's a very common way, I think, that, the character's growth is catalyzed, not just through the death, but through, in some way, placing the main character or a character in a situation where they're forced to succeed, the will or the, I guess, the responsibilities of the mentor, which I think, in a certain way, not just catalyzes their kind of growth in the plot, if you understand what I'm saying, but also they're just their maturity, their general maturity. And I think that's why in shonen storytelling, which is, overwhelmingly targeted towards a pretty young, audience, it's very often that we see characters like this, And I think it speaks very directly to these young people because, you know, it's like, you know, this character who is likely, you know, 15, 16, just like you, or even younger, or 14, blah, 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 you know, like they lost someone. This is how you sort of deal with that. And obviously, you know, there's a limit to how much you can learn from stories. But I think that it is nonetheless like it's a plot device, but it's a tried and true one and a good one at that. And it's one that, you know, I think a lot of authors use, you know, consciously of the fact that, you know, this is a cornerstone of storytelling, period. And that, you know, they have to treat that character with that in mind, you know, with all the developments that they give them, if any. That's sort of what's going to be in the forefront. That's the elephant in the room, so to speak. And I think it creates like this beautiful kind of like, again, I feel like I've used this word kind of way too much throughout the episode, but meta kind of tinge to it, right? Because it's like, yes, you know, we've seen these characters countless times before, even more so than the hot-blooded characters. Like, you know, this is like an ancient kind of character archetype. But the thing is that, you know, as redundant, quote unquote, as these characters can be, at the end of the day, that's sort of what we enjoy them for. And you know, it's sort of like you know what you're in for, but there are still some things that just are enjoyable regardless of how predictable they are. And I think that the mentor category is probably one of the most emblematic of that idea, and I appreciate that. All right, well, I can't say this is the moment that we've all been waiting for because it's not like we're doing a top 10 list right here, but now we are going to state what our favorites among these categories are, the seven that we've talked about today. Ben, would you do the honor of going first?
All right, so I guess to go in sort of like chronological order of like how
Yeah,
we did it.
exactly. Yeah.
So revenge, you know, of course, gotta go with the main man,
Yeah.
Dex, right? Yeah, just because like, what can you say, right? I mean,
Yeah.
we've already talked about Guts so much, but he's such an amazing, compelling protagonist, and as this sort of, you know, a revenge-driven character, he works so well within it. He's written so well. He feels real. He feels like, you know, you can feel his growth, and you get, and like you said, like you get closer to him, like as a result of his growth.
Yeah. And it ticks so many boxes that a lot of these other categories have as well, right? Like the flawed, the morally gray. Like there's a lot to love about those characters, for sure.
And I guess, and of course, he's your favorite as well, I assume, like of the archetypes.
I actually think, you know, my favorite, that's my second favorite, because my
All right.
favorite is the morally gray. Again, I think it's weird to even rank this because, again, as I stated when we were discussing it earlier, it's like such a broad category. But, you know, I think that the versatility of this category is just so awesome. And even though all of the characters that you could technically place in here are very different, I think they share a similar vibe of like, you know, these are characters that are grounded, they have a more intrinsic connection to reality compared to a lot of these other characters that are just kind of inhuman and unrealistic in certain senses. And I think they are automatically more engaging in that sense because it's like, you know, humans inherently immoral. I don't know, philosophical conceited crap that I want to say, but I'm not, you know, and I really like that. And yes, second would be just the revenge-based characters. It's just not over there because I think it lacks that same kind of variety. I think that, you know, it is also very easy to mess up a revenge character just by using that revenge factor as kind of like a cheap ticket to likability. Again, it's also possible to make the best characters of all time with this character archetype, you know, like the ones we've named throughout the video. Not the video, the recording. But yeah. What do you have second?
I guess I have to think about it, but you know, it's interesting because I sorry, but I actually thought we were doing like our favorites from each archetype, but you want to rank the archetypes themselves
Yeah, I mean
first.
we could. I don't know. Yeah, like if you want, yeah, sure.
All right, but I guess actually, because now I think of this, I was going like through that, like I said, like of ranking. Or not, I mean listing my favorite from each one, but I would actually say that The Morally Gray would actually be my favorite one. But bouncing off of that, I think my second favorite would, I mean, I think it would probably be the Revenge Patron.
Yeah, I
Just
think,
with
yeah. I mean, you and I, we like similar things, so I think that makes sense. For sure.
Yeah. And then,
Yeah, go ahead. Just list yours off, I think. Yeah, and then
All right. And then I think if I have to go from there, I think I like I think I my third favorite would be the mentor category, just because, I feel like even there, like, we have gotten a lot of really good characters out of characters. I like, Jiraiya, Ascot, like Skull Knight, Urahara, and of course, Gintoki, but he's of course the less traditional one. And yeah, so going off of there, I'm trying to think what my fourth would be. But I actually do like, honestly, I do like the hot-headed.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like? What's
Yeah,
not
I mean,
to
we didn't
like?
like talk about him, but like, I mean, Kenpachi actually fits pretty well into this
Exactly.
category. And what's not to love, right? I
I think,
mean, Kenpachi is just
yeah.
awesome.
Because that category is often mentioned in the same breath as the word protagonist, right? But it doesn't have to be. Kenpachi being an example of that exception for sure.
And then yeah, so I guess we're like to round out like the bottom few, like I would say the mastermind, and then the quad archetype, and then the morally pure. And I guess I feel like these are like sort of like general rankings, but I mean, there are very good characters that that can come from each of these, it's like.
I think it's just like I guess I was thinking of doing it this way because like I mean which one has the most hitters for me, right? Like if I think of my favorite characters of all time, right? Like which category do most of them fit in, blah blah blah. That's sort of how I was thinking of it. Like for example, my third category that I would put like in ranking, I would say would probably be the flawed archetype. I mean, again, it's hard to like a lot of the characters that fall into this category, but because of their intersections with, I think, a lot of other categories, for example, like a lot of the quote unquote flawed characters, that's not the main focus of their, it's more like a background focus, I think, of their character. I think like Shinji, for example, is like probably one of the only characters I can think of where like his whole character beat is that he's just messed up, right? Like he's flawed. And again, he's not the only one, but I think that most of the time, flawed characters, something else is going on in the foreground, like revenge or what have you. But I really, really like this category because I think it makes for some of the most gratifying, like just character resolutions as well. Like when there's that moment of clarity a lot of the times at the ends of these characters' kind of arcs, right? It's just so awesome, I personally think. And you listed all of yours, right? I didn't interrupt you, did I?
I think so, yeah.
And then I mean, I think my list as of there looks pretty similar to yours. I think after that, I would have probably the dumb kind of the hot-headed. Then probably the pure-hearted, just because I think I do really appreciate how brittle their kind of ideology can be because of like people being able to challenge it so easy because it's just like. Haha, yeah, you want to be lawful good. Well, what are you doing right now? I could probably point out six things you're doing right now as you think you're just breathing, sitting there that are morally incorrect, huh? Like, I think that's just facet. And then, I mean, after that, I do appreciate the masterminds. And I mean, last but not least, I really want to capitalize on that not least part, mentors. I think that, mentors. They're great. All of these are great, as Ben said. Like, great characters can come out of any of these, regardless of the rankings. But for me, mentors, again, I love mentors, and I sort of feel like I'm contradicting myself here. But the fact that I think there's less variety in the mentor category because oftentimes they are similar to one another, and they are a little more predictable. I think that does take away from them a little bit, but again, they're enjoyable. There's nothing wrong with a mentor character either. So yeah. Especially like, and I mean, yeah, there are possibilities for inversions like Gintoki, for example. Again, I haven't read or watched Gintama, but I trust for sure. All right. Well. Anything as a closing comment, or do you think we've covered?
No, I mean, I think we've covered, a good amount of ground
Yeah,
here,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah, 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 yeah. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this. I mean, again, excuse the inconsistent uploads. I'm gonna stop myself right there. I'm not gonna bore you guys with more excuses like every time. But yeah, hopefully this was to your liking, and we hope that you're gonna look forward to the next episode when that one comes out. As always, I mean, I love, 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 love recording these. It's so fun to just talk about this stuff until my voice is gone.
Indeed.
And yeah, we really appreciate it if you've stuck around. All right. Well then, stragglers.
All right, keep struggling.
Struggle on like berserk, like guts in the current chapters. Yeah, I
Every,
don't want to end up on
yeah, I
that.
still need to get to it actually, but yeah,
Oh,
but
shoot.
yeah, no,
Okay.
but I guess I have an idea, but
Yeah. It's not
yeah.
hard. If you've read the last few chapters, it's not hard to predict. No. Yeah.
Yeah. All
All
right.
right, well then, we will see you guys in the next one.
Yes.
Ciao.
Bye.
また夜が明ければお別れ、夢は時幻に。